둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I'm so sorry, I was just watching football.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the episode. If you're not already, please do hit that subscribe button. You'll get three brand new interviews sent to you every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones. You can grab us at Spotify and Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to give the series a rating. Please do leave a review while you're at it as well. We've had some great guests stop by lately. The cast of Women of Blue from Apple TV, they were just here. Adam Duritz of the Counting Crows. Reggie Watts, the comedian, has a new special called Nevermind. Derek Whibley of Sum 41, Juliana Hatfield, Tammy Stronach, she was the childlike empress in The Neverending Story. Minnie Driver was here, she's starring in The Serpent Queen. And in fact, that's our connection to this episode as well. I'm Kyle Meredith, and today my guest is Samantha Morton, the actress famous for movies like Minority Report, famous for being Alpha in The Walking Dead, is once again starring as Catherine de Medici, the Queen of France in the 16th century in the Starz series. It's season two, and we're going to get into talking about where this queen gets her drive from, the parallels between the 16th century and what's happening politically at this moment in the U.S. and the U.K. And she'll compare this role of the queen in contrast to playing Alpha in The Walking Dead as well. Samantha's also going to describe how her early interest in music and early collaborations with folks like Nightmare on Wax finally led to her debut album after Richard Russell gave her a call to get together to write and record. She'll discuss the record's autobiographical narrative, her love of Wall of Sound type of music, Metallica, Miles Davis, and getting to duet with UB40's Ali Campbell on this album called Daffodils and Dirt. That's what we're talking about. And the second season of The Serpent Queen. It's Kyle Meredith with Samantha Morton.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. It's so great to have you. You've got this incredible album called Daffodils and Dirt that I want to talk about in a few, but you're also back in the second season of The Serpent Queen, which has just very quickly become the best thing that I've seen. I love what you all are doing. This season's even better. I should just throw out, for everything that's going on right now, artistically for you, congratulations, because it's so good.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, Serpent Queen, we were so, you know, there's so much telly out there, you know, television, there's so much kind of content, so many kind of streamers vying for everybody's attention. And what I'm so proud about is the level of, I'd say the word class, like this is like high level writing, drama. It doesn't dumb anything down. It's a costume drama, but it's shot in a very contemporary fashion. So people, you know, kind of viewers who like shows like Succession really like our show because it's about, you know, the nitty gritty of family and power. And also we get to celebrate this woman who was a real woman in history that has been a little bit forgotten, to say the least. So I get to play this formidable character. So, yeah.
It's been an education. I didn't know who she was beforehand. I love history. I love historical shows. I try to find it. But you're right. For whatever reason, you know, this was a new person to learn about. But just watching how she works, how you work in the character, like she talks about her kids a lot. Is that her driving force? Is power her driving force? Like, how do you really see it?
I think my interpretation is that her child is France, is, and also kind of keeping things peaceful. You know, she kind of wants to rule in a peaceful fashion. She doesn't want religious war. She wants a secular state. She doesn't want the, you know, state and church to be the same. So she's ahead of her time, really, Catholic France then. So the children is a complicated one because for any families of power and influence, people marry within power and influence. People send their children to school nowadays to keep them on the line of like, who might they meet or what university they're going to go to, feeder school, certainly in the UK, with the hope that their child will A, get a brilliant education, but B, possibly have a job in politics. Or it's been there for forever, you know, how we think about who our daughter or son marries. And I think for Catherine, you know, being regent, you know, she's got to think about the country's her baby as well. So you have to sacrifice love and your own identity for the sake of the country. Now, we just have a new prime minister in the UK, which I'm incredibly excited about because we've had—
Congratulations there.
Thank you very much. We've had 14 years of I would call evil government, like an evil government, incredibly right-wing in a horrific, horrific time. But one thing that Keir Starmer said when he came, when he into his position of power, is that we are in service. It is not the government of the individual, like the self-serving government for the individual. It's about other people now. We are serving you. You're our boss in a way, you know, the people. And I think Catherine does that in a complicated fashion. You know, she knows what's best for France. And she's just very, very ahead of the game in how she looks at everything. But she has to play the game, pretend to be stupid, because if she's seen to be clever, then she'll be shot down.
It's that whole, every time I watch it, it's like she wants to govern by love, but by being feared because she has to. It's this love and fear thing that's constantly...
Because also if you think about men, we men in history have been glorified and we make films about them and write books about them and study them and their behavior and their achievements, but we don't tend to do that with women as much. So that's why it's pretty cool as well. But also I think Justin manages to kind of make a show. It doesn't feel like some kind of feminist, you know, ramming something down your throat in a very kind of, I don't know, like boring way. It's like, it seems quite contemporary and it feels that way. So I'm very proud of it.
Yeah. And I had many on here because, you know, talk about the second season being different from the first, having the two of you all just sparring in these. And you're right. You're both women and there is so much to say about that. But the way it is presented, it's also just more than that. You have these two very powerful people in this very intense chess match, you know, and to just watch it unfold, both of you all. I mean, I'm looking for the right word, delicious television. I don't think really says it.
It's funny. It's really funny. So it's brutal. It's gruesome. It's contemporary. It's funny. And for history buffs out there, it's historical.
And to your points about, you know, your election in the UK and what we're trying to go through over here, it's like, I'm just so hopeful that we're in line as our country seem to be a lot of the time. Like, nobody's happy right now over here.
Yeah, it's complex. I think America to me just seems like, well, first of all, I love it here, always have. It's, you know, a dream to be here. To work here is an even bigger dream. But it's so big, America. It feels like so many different countries. And I've worked all over America and love it dearly. But it does seem very different. So it must be really hard. It must be really so complex. It's not as simple. We're quite little in the UK. We've obviously got culturally, we've got, you know, the Welsh, the Scottish, the Cornish. Some people would like to kind of, you know, have their own currency or whatever. But yeah, we don't, it's not the same, but it's tricky.
And we'll be right back right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
You might not be a tech genius, but you want your business to crush it, and you need a website now. Thankfully, Bluehost makes it easy. Customized, optimized, and monetized. Everything exactly how you want with AI. Your site can be up within minutes. You really won't believe it. Plus, Bluehost keeps you protected 24/7. No more worrying about hackers. Just relax and focus on your customers. So whatever your hustle may be, secure your online presence in 2025 with Bluehost. Head to Bluehost.com to start now.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Samantha Morton.
To embody a character this long, and obviously the difference between television and movie and how long you have to stay with a character, and just her demeanor. Like, is it easy to shake off? Do you have that? Some actors have that issue, but not all of them. Like, you know, the camera's done and I'm gone. But to have, you know, such a solid rock of a person, like, does that stick with you?
No.
No.
So, I mean, I don't know if you like The Walking Dead. I play Alpha in and I come in season 9, and that was a pretty formidable character, a fan favorite of in the world of villains. And no, you do, you have to learn. And I learned years ago to leave it at the door. You can't take that home. You just can't. So, but also the joy of playing somebody over 8 episodes is that you get to map out their journey. And it's not that you shoot in sequence of what you're, you know, kind of the character's going through, because often you're in the studio for a few months and you're on location. So you do have to go back and forth and you have to map out your performance to a degree. But it's a joy to get to play her. And to go back and do season 2 was just, yeah, I was over the moon.
Do you have someone in your mind when you're fourth walling it into the camera?
No, the camera.
The camera.
The world, the audience. Anyone listen? it's the world, isn't it? You're talking, it's kind of almost like your inner thoughts as well, her inner thoughts, the things that she's really thinking and feeling. So you have the scene that she's in, and then the reality, the truth.
It's nice that you could do that. And I only say that coming from a point like, because I'm also in radio, and we're told right away, like, you're talking to a person, you know, like when you're on the air, you're talking to a person. And I've gone through those points in my life where it's fun. I'll imagine whoever, you know, celebrities, fake people, it doesn't matter. And I do find that helpful. And I guess I do mean this as a compliment. Like, you're just making it so real and it is so personal. And maybe that's, you know, part of the crew and their magic as well, you know, cinematographer, whoever. But it's so real.
Well, I think that the camera for me has been my friend since I started acting when I was 12 years old, my first professional job, and I'm 47, so it's a very long time. And I know the world of, you know, a film set more than any, I can't describe it. It's like a second language. It's my home. And I find the camera a very safe space. It's seeing into my soul. It's, you can't hide anything, can you? You know, so the invitation to break the fourth wall and talk to the audience whilst in character is a joy, because I get to kind of do the, as I try to explain, you get to do both. You get to play the scene where maybe the character has to be, you know, hiding all her emotions to achieve something, and then turn to camera and be real and go, this, I didn't want to do that, but I had to, you know, and kind of, it's also a little bit, you know, you get those books when you're a kid where go to page 17 and then you can choose the way that your story unfolds. I think what the Serpent Queen does so beautifully is takes the audience along in real time as she breaks the scene and talks to the audience like she's a presenter to go, oh my God, can you believe what's happening? What the is going on here? And then, oh, I'm back to the drama. So it's really odd, but in a way that I think empowers the audience to be more connected, I feel. And I think, you know, plays have been doing that for forever, but kind of famously in the last few years, Fleabag did that so brilliantly, which is show, you know, she's talking to, the, you know, so it was, it's good.
And then of course I should hit on the soundtrack too, because the incredible soundtrack and the way that the music seems to influence the entire mood of the show. And a lot of times not till the very end, which is really interesting too, because with a lot of shows you use, you know, those modern songs throughout, like I'm thinking like, especially given the era and the genre, like Marie Antoinette, the movie, you know, where you had those songs all the way throughout. You don't get it till the credits. And still in that moment, that credit redefines everything that I just saw.
Yeah, yeah. And Justin writes those songs into the script.
Really?
They're not done by music. Like, he writes them in. He knows what the song he wants and how he wants it to build. And yeah. He's super clever.
Do you ever use music to get into the character?
Always. I started from the very beginning doing that because music is emotion. And as you're prepping a part, you might listen to something. I also write. Obviously, I make music, but I write. And it's always been a way of emoting and feeling something, whether it was when I was younger, it'd be like, I don't know, Radiohead or, you know, PJ Harvey, whoever I was into at the time, I'd find a small piece of maybe Chopin nocturnes, you know, in E flat, I'd find a tiny bit of music that I'd have on repeat. But back then we'd have like a Walkman. And I'd have this big case of like so many CDs that I'd take on every film set. And then we got the little pods and like you could just, you know, do mixes on your, you know, your iPod. Were they called iPods? Yeah. And so then you do that. And then that was gone. And then now it's on the phone. Now I find it really, I don't like to take a phone to set because then I get emails and I get text messages and I don't, you know, I will leave my phone somewhere because it's very important for me that I don't get distracted by anything else. So I don't listen to music as much as I used to, but I do when I'm prepping. So in the hotel room or in my Airbnb, but I hate having my phone with me because there's puzzles and there's the news and there's social media. And I don't want that world when I'm in my other world. They need to bring back the iPods. If they brought back the iPods, I'd be so happy because then I, you know.
Just grab one online. You could grab one. You could just eBay it like one of the classics.
They don't work anymore. I've still got them. You can't use them.
Oh, I didn't know.
They're obsolete. I'm pretty sure they're obsolete.
We're on the opposite end because, as I was saying, I have a teenager. And because I have a teenager who's so interested in old media, like he has my old Walkman and he uses
it. Yeah.
He went out with my Discman the other day and I had to tell him, you can't run with that, kiddo. It skips. Yeah. It's all back in my world. It's so weird.
Yeah. Yeah. My daughter, my 16-year-old collects CDs and my husband was a DJ, so we've got absolutely hundreds of vinyl. But it's also tricky on shows. Like if you're doing a movie sometimes and you just can method out and you can not method, you know, you get into the zone and you're there with your headphones. And then often on movies, there's a lot of time in between setups. Whereas in television, they have to shoot a huge amount very quickly, however many pages a day. So by the time you've kind of finished one setup, oh, you're onto the next setup. You haven't got time to go and find your music and put it in your ears and get into the moment. But there are some sweet young actors that I work with that have these big headphones on. And I'm like, you're messing up your wig. You know, I don't think Meryl Streep back in the day would have had massive Beats pills, whatever they're called, on her flipping ears. You know, act, you know, you've got to be able to act.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Samantha Morton.
It's an easy transition to this album, as I mentioned, Daffodils and Derp. Had you toyed with ever doing an album before?
I was a musician when I was younger, so I was a session singer and I sang for bands like Nightmares on Wax and various kind of rave friends of mine who made kind of rave music in their bedrooms, you know, when I was very, very young. And then at 16, I got a play at the Royal Court Theatre in London, and that changed my life. And then the acting was just all the time, and then that was my job. And so the music was something that it was a private passion. So when Richard Russell, the genius that is Richard Russell, got in touch to want to sample my voice after I did Desert Island Discs, I said he could use my voice. We just started talking for a couple of hours. And then before I knew it, we were talking about our musical influences and then it just kind of happened. It wasn't planned, and we didn't even say we were going to be a band or make a record. It was just like experimenting, really. And then before we knew it, we had 18 songs, and he said, "I think we're a band." And we were like, "What should we call ourselves?" And we had all these different band names. That's the hardest thing. And then we had a conversation with our label and our management, and it was like, well, Sade is a band, has always been a band, but it's Sade. And, you know, Florence and the Machine were always a band, but it was kind of Florence, really, you know. So there's so many examples of that. So I was like, okay, we'll be Sam Morton, because I'm Samantha Morton as an actress.
It's so interesting then that, it, you know, how it happened, as you said, and almost in this accidental way. I mean, with purpose, but to still have created such a uniquely perfect sonic world.
Oh, thank you.
That you did. Like, and maybe that's in that talk. Maybe that's, you know, when you're talking about the influences and all that, because, you know, you've already mentioned Radiohead. Of course, you can hear some of that. And there's, of course, a bit this dreamy quality, you know, sometimes Cocteau, sometimes Twin Peaksian, you know, like, how did you get there?
So the album, there's a narrative to the album, so it's semi-autobiographical. And the photograph that is used on the album cover is by a photographer called Nick Woplington, who is very, very famous in England. And that photograph was taken in 1986, but on the street that I grew up on. So that could have been little me, you know. And when I first started writing a lot of the songs on the album, it suddenly became very autobiographical. And it's sort of a certain time in my life. It really kind of starts in 1990 and goes through to 1992. So it's like when you're making a film, it's a period. It's period in a way. It's set at a time. Now the music is the sonic world of the Sam Morton sound is. So first of all, for me, whether it's classical music or film scores, it's heavily sampled. You'll hear that, you know, it's really, really heavily sampled, which is quite tricky nowadays because of the expense of that and ideas of sound. But it's kind of, what's the word for it? It's kind of like the spirit of both of us, you know, the essence of both of us, the making of both of us. We're not young. I'm 47. I was 45 when we wrote the songs that are on the album. But it's kind of, it's autobiographical, therefore it's almost, I wanted it to feel like a record that you would have found that you didn't know came out at that time. Does that make sense? A little bit of that. So
not only does that make sense, but my note on here that I made, I said, I wish this record had been made 30 years ago so I could have spent the last 30 years listening to it.
My God, wow. Thank you so much.
So I completely understand what you're getting at there because I feel that in these songs.
But I've had a lifetime of experience to bring to this, to my first album. And I think what's, for some musicians, they make their first and second album when they're very young, and then they're running out of ideas because they may be successful. What do they then write about? Where, you know, it's tricky for people. I've had, I'd say, 35 years of writing poetry, of writing songs and not being able to share them with anyone. And so you meet a kindred spirit and I'm there playing piano, or I have, you know, a Mellotron, a digital Mellotron at home, and I'm making music, or I'm going into the woods and I'm recording things on my phone and sending them to him, or, you know, and it's, I don't know, I'm very, very influenced. I really like Wall of Sound. You know, I like, whether it's kind of 50s music or, you know, the Beach Boys, whoever, like I like most music, you know, like Metallica. I love Metallica, but I also really, really, really love Miles Davis. I love, you know, classical, like all of it. Like I love music, and I think when you make your first record, if you like, whether it's an EP or you're lucky enough to be able to record 18 songs or 13 songs or whatever it is, you are, you know, you're kind of sharing with the world your soul and your heart. When you get to our age, you're not doing it for anyone else. You know, I'm not young, and you know, I'm not going to be on. You know what I mean? It's like so much now with music has to come an image, has to come an image that can sell the music just as the music sells itself, you know? So it's a tricky time, but it's for those of your listeners that don't know Richard, you know, he produced Gil Scott-Heron, worked very closely with Damon Albarn, Bobby Womack, Prodigy, you know, he signed Adele. He's just a genius. So I think my ability to perform, as in the way I perform as an actor, and my ability, I didn't realize, kind of, I've written scripts that have done very well, but to write lyrics was, you know, learning to how to exercise a completely new muscle that's been laying dormant, that's been hungry, chomping at the bit to work.
Was there, because you had a narrative, and it sounds like you decided on the narrative, I mean, was there a driving reason other than that's where we start?
No, it just kind of happened because so many different things. We kind of made loads of different songs that are not on the album as well, because we were just making the music we wanted to make that day, or how we were feeling, or Richard had very, very personal themes that he was bringing to the table. I was bringing things to the table. Purple Yellow is about my family and about childhood abuse and historical kind of genetic predispositions in families to perpetuate cycles of harm and trauma. And then it's also about my mother dying and me, you know, the palliative care that I had to give to her dying of lung cancer. So it's kind of like, these are kind of universal themes. It doesn't matter whether it's set in 92 or 2024 or 1972, or if you're listening to Nick Drake, it's kind of the themes that, if you read the lyrics from the album, the themes are kind of, they feel universal. They don't feel, you know, I think so.
Yeah, no, I mean, and there's so much poetry in the album. Then there's the way they make me feel, like Let's Walk in the Night, which we're playing a lot right here in FPK in Louisville right now.
Oh, amazing, thank you.
Is a classic.
I watched all the videos, by the way.
What's that, sorry?
Directed all the music videos. So when you look, I wrote and directed those as well. So when you go on Spotify or Apple, wherever people get their music, I hope they like the videos. But the video was set in 92. The video to Let's Walk in the Night is so beautiful, I think.
I admit I haven't seen it yet. And I still watch a lot of music videos, so I can't wait.
Yeah, I did music videos for The Kills and Marry Unfaithful. So I direct music videos as well. But this was like, so to do my own videos, we're like, oh my God, this is awesome, you know.
I'm still a very, very big proponent in music videos, and you have this idea that left in the MTV era, and it really hasn't, because there are still these great short films that people are doing, from Superstar. The superstars are especially still doing it, and I mean, everybody still gets to, and I still find it one of the most thrilling ways to consume music.
Yeah, and a lot of the time, there are some absolutely extraordinary filmmakers, whether it's Jonathan Glazer, Lynn Ramsey, Chris Cunningham, who I've been fortunate to work with. They did I say unfortunate? I meant fortunate to work with. they make music videos, whether it's for Tom York or Radiohead or whatever, or the Doves. Like, people, it's because they love music and they get an opportunity to just, it's like the art of making a commercial is fascinating. You know, the Hovis commercials in England, these commercials from when I was a kid were like short films. They were just extraordinary. So yeah, there's an art form.
Kaleidoscope, is that your voice in the, yeah, you know, distorted thing?
Oh, that's both. That's me and a singer called Rose's backing singer. Well, she's not just a backing singer, she's incredible. She's Rose's. She's an artist in her own right, and she very kindly came to help. And the other musician we have playing lots on the record is Laura Groves. And if people don't know her music, they should check her out and her album. She's phenomenal. She's working with Bat for Lashes at the moment, but she's on tour with us. We're going on tour, which is exciting. We're playing all the British festivals over the summer. But she's just phenomenal. And she was there, and we had Jack Panatte and Tick and Ali Campbell. And I mean, we were just so blessed.
The Ali Campbell, I hadn't looked to see. And then I hear, you know, the very first time I'm listening to the album, and you reference UB40 at the beginning of it. And then suddenly I hear the voice, and I was like, wait, it's that moment where your mind catches up to everything. And I'm like looking at the liner notes, and I'm like, oh, there it is. That was a good little trick there.
Well, that was a dream come true, because I had fantasized about doing a duet. Broxtowe Girl just felt, because the opening of the album, Sitting There, Head in Hands, You Fucked It. Sorry, I'm swearing, but that's the opening of the album. That's about my dad. You know, like, he had all these opportunities to, and he messed up. And so Broxtowe Girl is actually a positive about my dad. There was some amazing, like, when people have pasts that are complex, there's negative sometimes, but there's also some incredibly positive times. So I wanted to have some kind of sing along a little, you know, with not like a duologue, but, you know, like, sing with someone that was kind of a version of my dad in a way. Not that Ali Campbell was old enough to be my dad, but you know, like, he's not. But it was this somebody that had this wisdom in their voice, you know, this, you know, the way that kind of, oh my gosh, Johnny Cash, you know, this voice that's a lived in voice. I really hoped that we would find somebody that had a voice with that kind of level of history. And Richard said that he'd got Ali, and I just fell over. I was like, I think I cried. I was like, this is just a dream. Wow, thank you.
And you sound great together. And again, I mean, I think I can compliment every single song for a different reason here. It really is one of my favorite releases. What do you get to do with it? Because you're balancing the life, right? Like, where does this album live? Is it the beginning of something?
Well, I hope so. I mean, we got a record deal, and as a band, and we have management. We've played 4 sold out shows in the UK, and I'm supporting K Tempest at Coco in November, and I'm playing Green Man, End of the Road, We Out Here, Houghton Festival. So I'm playing the festivals, and then I go and shoot a movie for a few weeks, and then I get back in the studio. So it's like, I'm really lucky, because as an actor, you have so much downtime when you're waiting for the right role, or maybe roles don't come your way. And I'm lucky because I have this other outlet for my creativity now, which is great.
And we all benefit. So that's
well, nice. I hope so. Not yet. I think people are pleasantly surprised, because so many actors make music as well now. And sometimes it is they love music, but it's not always well received by the music press. And I don't read reviews, but touch wood, thank God, we've been well received as a band, because I think, yeah, it's good. I'm happy. I'm proud.
As you should be. Congratulations on this. Daffodils Are So Great. And especially with the Serpent Queen, I hope that continues and continues and continues, because I am invested at this point.
So. Yeah, well, good, good. Yeah, we need to know what happens.
Yeah, right on. Samantha, thank you so much for taking the time. Seriously, it's been such a pleasure getting to talk to you about this.
You too. Thank you.
My thanks to Sam. Daffodils and Dirt is out now, as is the second season of The Serpent Queen, out on Stars. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, please do hit that subscribe button while you're here so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can grab us at Spotify, at Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Again, please do give the series a rating. Leave a review as well if you feel so inspired. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Astro Gilberto, The Beach Boys, Soccer Mommy, Richard Hell, Plastic Bertrand, Radiohead, Garbage, Jade Bird, Salt and Pepper, Aretha Franklin, Claro, Sasami, Cage the Elephant, The Smashing Pumpkins, Jim Blossoms, Hozier, Luna, Ray, and my interview with Beach House. Again, just an example of what you can hear every weeknights starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence says your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same as at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition of Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I'm going to go look at the score now and pray to God it's not bad news.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.